Take your seats. Good morning. It's 9:30 a.m. and I call this meeting of the Security Committee to order. Is it Glass?
Yep.
Yeah. Please take roll.
Chair Boylan.
Aye.
Vice Chair Ariscotta.
There.
Regent Batista.
Here.
Regent Brown. Regent Downs.
Present.
Here.
You have a quorum.
Thank you. Regent Bautista, would you please lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah, right?
That's a good one.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice.
Thank you, Regent Bautista. I will now move to agenda item one. It says provide land. Oh, I thank everybody who's done anything and everything for this land and this university system. And I thank you all for being here. We'll now move to agenda item number one, public comment. Is there any public comment? Do I go to Elko first? Or to, is there any public comment up in Reno?
None in Reno.
Thank you, Vice Chair Ariscotta. None in Reno. Is there any public comment up in Elko?
No public comment, Malcolm.
All right, thank you. Is there any public comment anywhere else, or just that's it, right? Here. Any public comment here? Is there any public comment on the phone? Let me see, what's the number? Okay. For those who would like to call in and offer public comment, please dial 669-444-9171 and enter meeting ID 992-8475-3091 with passcode 555-555. I should have done that first. And I see there's no public comment here. So we'll go to agenda item two. The committee will consider approval of the November 18th, 2025 meeting minutes. Do I have a motion?
I move to approve.
Second.
A second. Okay, we have a motion to approve. All in favor, say aye or nay if you don't.
Aye.
It seems like we've got the ayes. Thank you. The meeting minutes have been approved. Okay. Chair's report. We've had a few interesting things happen in our different campuses. We've had a few emergency management trainings. We've done a few dealing with... Ah, there's a chancellor. How are you, sir? So good to see you. We've looked at a few different kind of things to do to keep us safe. I'm always impressed. There's the chief of the north. He's here too. I love it. So we are really safe today. And I always appreciate anybody talking to me or calling me or asking me or giving me any advice on safety and security. I know a wee bit about it. So I'll leave it at that. And I'm so glad that the two chiefs are here. I know Chief Vasquez had to leave early today, or something you had planned, because he made me get up to take this early morning meeting. I was coming at 11:30, and they said, ah, here. So you owe me one, Chief, but that's okay. Thank you. Thank you for being here. All right. University Police Department, external evaluation, information only. Vice Chancellor and Chief General Counsel James Martinez will present an update. Counsel, please. Thank you, sir.
Good morning, Jimmy Martinez for the record. This is an information-only item. Wanted to put this on the agenda to bring everybody up to speed on where we are with the external evaluation. If you recall, Title IV, Chapter 1, Section 12.14 requires that at least every 5 years there be an external evaluation done of the University Police Department operations. The purpose of the reviews per the policy is to assure that the police departments and their employees are operating in an appropriate and efficient manner consistent with the welfare of the institution of which they are a part. In the backup material is IACLEA's proposal. IACLEA did our last external evaluation. We got several proposals. They were the most competitive, and since they also had familiarity with the system already, we invited them back to complete this one. As you'll see in the proposal, there's three aspects to the proposal, and it's broken down in three phases. So the first phase is IACLEA's assessment of the Northern Campus. Phase two is their assessment of the Southern Command. And phase three, per the board's request, is an assessment of the reporting structure of the University Police Department. Per the policy, the executive report and the review conducted is presented to the Board of Regents. We are currently anticipating bringing this forward to the board in the June quarterly meeting. And that's where we are today. The IACLEA group is currently preparing to start planning their site visits in the north and the south. And we're looking forward. Our office is going to be the point person for any of those communications. We have put them in contact with all of the appropriate individuals at UPD and at the campus level. But if there's any breakdown in communication or efficiencies needed, our office will step in and make sure that those occur efficiently. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Counsel. Any questions?
I know you can all hear me anyway, but thank you. Any questions from up north, Regents? Or
question
anyone?
Up north?
Sorry, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Boylan. Council Martinez, on page 5 of 6 of the briefing papers, in particular the project methods from the IACLEA, it states that it's going to be, once contract's in place, IACLEA will make a series of requests for records, budget, statistics, call volume, staffing levels, legal documents, such as memorandums of understanding, etc. Is there any information that is going to be redacted with what IACLEA is going to be provided, or is this a significant amount of information that legally allowable that to be provided to IACLEA?
Jimmy Martinez, that's a great question. If there's any documents with sensitive information, they will be provided either under privilege or redacted. So either way, we'll make sure that any of those records that are being shared, any confidential personnel information in those documents will be protected.
And what extent of documentation will be provided? I know that it's somewhat ambiguous. What they're saying is records, budget, stats, volume, staffing levels. Are they going to be, as you stated, items are going to be redacted, but in regards to victims or perhaps assaults, will those names also be included with this report?
Jimmy Martinez, for the record, I do not believe that any information to that level will be relevant to the external evaluation. So I do not think it would be. If any thing is ancillarily included, that we would make sure that information is redacted. A lot of this information is fairly routine and necessary before they do their site visits. The other thing that we've asked them to do is also, if they look at the reporting structure per the board's request and make any recommendations for a change of reporting structure, we ask that they include any fiscal impact assessment that they can, so that when we bring it forward, it's not just a recommendation for a change in reporting without the correlating fiscal impact that the board would have to consider.
Thank you, Counselor.
Thank you, Vice Chair. God, I just forgot your name suddenly. Ariscotta. Thank you. Any other regents on the committee or off the committee that have any questions or suggestions? Regent Del Carlo? Carvalho? Oh, I thought you had something. Okay. I have something to say about this. This is Title 4, Chapter 1, and the rest of it, it slipped my mind what you said.
Correct.
Right. Now, I would suggest that we change this. This should have been something that the regents brought to the board to change this language, because we have our two experts, the two chiefs. Don't walk away, Chief. I'm praising you. We have our two chiefs right here, and they are our experts. We don't need anybody, really, in my opinion, from the outside, who's going to cost us thousands of dollars. And the funny thing is this, the recommendation they gave us the last time, what was it, $75,000? We still didn't follow the recommendation. So I'm not sure. We just keep spinning our wheels in NCHI about these kind of things. This should be changed, that we shouldn't have an outside evaluation. We should have our own chiefs give the chancellor a report of how we should go about doing something. Those are our experts, and we have them. So I'm pretty much against any of these outside reports, and then we don't follow them. We haven't followed their recommendations. We just spent money again uselessly. So now they'll give us a recommendation, we'll give them good money, and then we won't follow their recommendation either. So it doesn't make any sense. Chancellor, what are your thoughts about that? Should we just keep giving people money and then not do anything that they ask us to do after we ask them to tell us what to do?
Thank you, Chair Boylan.
You're welcome.
We're following policy. I think if we want to change policy, we can. But right now, that's what the policy says, and so that's what we're doing.
I love this. A policy man. That's why I said we need to change this policy, not the useless policies we were trying to change at the last meeting. That's my personal opinion.
Chair Boylan, if I just might jump in here just a second.
Where is he? Where is he?
Special Counsel Nielsen, just a, a suggestion. I think amending Title 4, Chapter 1, Section 12.14 would be an appropriate request in new business, if you would so choose.
I get you. If we wanted to change it, but that's my opinion. I take the chair's privilege to make an opinion. I have an opinion. I always do. So you got to hear my opinion when I'm the chair, and I've got this thing to go tuck, tuck, tuck. So I'll make my opinion. But thank you, Councillor. I appreciate it. You and I have talked about this, and I appreciate all this information you've given me. Thank you so much, Council.
And Jimmy Martinez, for the record, I would like to just clarify that when the previous external evaluation was done by IACLEA, that was in 2018, and when they brought their recommendations forward, many of the recommendations were implemented. So I want to just clarify that for the record. At that time, the North UPD North had already started the consolidation process, but the South had not.
You're right.
So since then, we did follow their recommendations and fully consolidate both North and South. And then the only part that was not further consolidated was the statewide consolidation under a commissioner model, or they had a few other recommendations. And that was more of a budget concern and a way to determine whether or not the board wanted to go further. And then when the board started having these conversations again over the last couple years, it was determined that that the board would rather wait until the next external evaluation was done to make sure that the recommendation was still a further consolidation in the reporting structure. So that's how we came to where we are today.
Awesome, and I thank you for that, because I'm not in favor of a head honcho. I think we have the two best chiefs that we could have there, their own honchos, head honchos. But I'm glad we didn't follow that one. But the other things were slightly helpful, but we didn't follow all the recommendations. You're looking at me, Regent, because I know you were active in this too, and I appreciate everything I learned from you when you were chair and talking about these things. Thank you, Councillor. Any other suggestions, ideas? Yeah, because I wasn't in favor of head honcho or anything like that either. All right. Thank you. Thank you, Chief. Council. I haven't had any coffee today. Okay. University Police Department, item number 4. Vice Chancellor and Chief General... We've been through that. Number 5. Arnold Vasquez, Chief of Police. Item number 5, that is. University Police Services Southern Command. Chief, thank you so much for being here. Appreciate it, sir.
Absolutely. Thank you. And so I'll just kind of want to apologize up front. I know I only have 10 minutes. I have a lot of information to talk about. I'll try and get through it as quickly as I can. For the record, Arnold Vasquez, Chief of Police, University Police Department Southern Command. Good morning, Chair Boylan, Vice Chair Escada, and members of the committee and other regents as well. Thank you for the time today. I'll be providing an update for the department's statistics and activities for the calendar year 2025, and also share that the 2024 annual security reports for CSN, NSU, and UNLV were published last year. The annual security reports include crime statistics for the calendar years 2024, 23, and 22 at these respective campuses, and they are required, as required by law, these reports need to be submitted to the Department of Education and are included in your supplemental materials for review. All right. Okay. Looks like I need to put my glasses on. Okay, for our department statistics, you've seen this before. This is for our 2025 calendar year. As you can see, we nearly generated 49,000 computer-aided dispatch events. These include any and all officer activity. Of the total activity, officers initiated nearly 43,000 of those events, which we have notated here as officer-initiated activity. That includes like traffic stops, any proactive contacts, field contacts, building checks, foot patrols, bike patrols, things of that nature. Through that year, we also received 6,000 calls for service. Those calls for service are actually calls that we receive at our dispatch center, and we dispatch our officers out to handle those particular calls. And as a result, we generated about 1,900 reports for those particular cases. Nice graphic here. So year-over-year activity. So this slide illustrates a comparison of activity from 2024 and 2025, the calendar years. The department increased the officer-initiated activity as the year progressed over 2025. This accounted for approximately a 15% increase in activity generated by the officers year over year. The calls for service also show a 5% decrease. Now, I mentioned this before that we can't point to any one thing and say that calls for service have decreased because of X. In this case, I think that it's not a far reach to say that the officers are out there engaged more on the campuses, making more field contacts, talking to more people, and thus now that phone call is not generated or produced and put into our dispatch center. Folks are actually able to reach to see an officer on campus, make that contact, and just go ahead and generate that particular contact, whether it's a report, an incident, a crime, whatever it might be. So can't say specifically that that's the reason for that decrease, but we believe that that's the case. Okay. Okay, so here's some of our crime statistics from 2024 and 2025. You know, we still see general volatility in several areas of note. What this shows is a consistency from 2024 and improvements due to the additional officer proactivity while on duty. Some areas where we expect to see significant reductions, or we did see some, were in the areas of fraud, which is at about a 32% reduction, and some vandalism cases as well. I'll point out that the bullet point there that is labeled peace, that's really just crime category, which actually covers really disturbing the peace or nuisance-type crimes that are encountered in the field. A lot of those are disturbing the peace, harassment-type calls, things where officers are being obstructed in their duties and so forth, or disturbances throughout. So those actually have an increase, if you'll see that, but that's primarily because, in my opinion, officers are out there, they're actually more engaged, and so therefore they're able to kind of address these issues before they become larger issues. So offenses such as narcotics, trespass, and disturbing the peace, as I mentioned, are all kind of tied into that, just because we have more people we have on campus and out on foot. We have seen an increase in theft, as you note there. That is something that we have been working diligently on. Primarily, they're related to bicycle and scooter thefts on campus. And we have a number of different strategies that we've deployed to address those. Recently, our detectives have made two arrests and have been able to tie a number of those thefts to those particular individuals. We just have to wait and see how the prosecution side of things work out. But at the end of the day, we're still going to be looking to implement more creative strategies to deal with those particular issues. And it's not just really the crime-fighting side of it. It's also the prevention side. So we do a number of on-campus engagements that educate students and staff who do have some of those property items on campus and how they can try and safeguard that. But I'll speak to that a little bit later. Okay, hiring and recruiting. Oh, gosh, I'm running out of time quick here. Since last year, we have, as you can see, there's a number of positions here that we've been able to reduce our vacancy rate. Essentially, we went from a 22% vacancy rate in 2024 to down to about an 8% vacancy rate. I previously reported we were down to about a 7%. We lost a few people in the academy. And that accounted for those particular that particular rise in a percentage point. But we are working very hard to continue our recruiting efforts and hiring efforts, and we're making good progress in that area. Okay, as I mentioned, the Academy. So the Southern Desert Regional Police Academy continues to operate under the leadership of College of Southern Nevada and partners with other local law enforcement agencies throughout the valley. This last year, we had two classes. We have two cohorts every year, 2501 and 2502. 2501 graduated 18 recruits, and we actually graduated three for UPD. We started with six, but we graduated three. In 2502 cohort, that class graduated 16 recruits for law enforcement. We started with seven, and UPD graduated three. And I just want to talk a little bit about, you know, our recruitment efforts continue, as I mentioned, and it's really difficult in this profession to get qualified folks to send to the academy, and I'll just give you a quick little sample of that. So during this most recent recruitment process for the academy that just started this year in 2601, we reached out to 145 applicants, received 69 responses, 27 of which showed up for our physical agility test, 22 moved on to the written portion, and 19 people in total were interviewed. Of those 19, we sent seven to backgrounds, where all but one remained eligible for hire. We hired that one individual, and he is currently in the academy. I believe they just completed their first month of the academy, so they have a few months left. And I'm happy to report I was just out there with him yesterday, and he seems to be doing great. Very happy about that. Okay, we talked a little bit about some of the community engagement and some of the things that we do on campus. We're always looking for meaningful ways to connect with our campuses and the communities that we serve. We do those through a number of safety presentations, active assailant preparedness training, and campus-specific events such as freshman student semester kickoff at CSN, spring career and internship expo at NSU, and take back the night at UNLV, just to name a few. In essence of time, I'll skip through some of the others, but the one thing that I do want to point out is that over this last year, we participated in 184 events, community events throughout our campuses, and I'm very proud to report that because we actually were able to stay on pace with nearly doubling what we have done in the past, and we've actually been able to add more robust type of presentations and trainings as a result. One thing I just want to quickly say, and I'm really running out of time, I apologize. One of the initiatives that we'll be launching this year is our Citizens Police Academy. I'm really excited about that. That's not anything that's really new to the police environment, but I think it's a good way for us to actually have another way to connect with our communities, but also show folks that we serve kind of a little bit about what we do and how we do it. And this way we can have a little bit more of that educational opportunity as well. So look for that in the future. Okay. A number of grants here, some of them you've seen before. One of the ones that's really important that I want to point out is our Joining Forces grant. We continue to see that. There's a large campaign throughout the Southern Nevada area in the Las Vegas Valley about traffic enforcement and trying to reduce fatalities in and around our valley. We experience those as well in and around our campuses, not necessarily fatalities, but reckless driving, DUI driving, things of that nature. So we continue to pursue that and work in conjunction with our local law enforcement partners. And you might have seen some of this stuff that's been published or on the news. But we are a part of that. I'll go through a few other grants here. But for this last calendar year, we applied for, well, let me back up. So the Joining Forces grant, we're also still working on the TVTP NC system-wide grant. That one, we're hoping that we will have some final approvals at the end of March so we can continue to move that forward. And then we have, wrapping up this particular year, is our DOJ COPS Western Region De-escalation Training Grant. I just want to quickly report out some stats on that. Through this initiative, we've reached over 2,100 officers throughout the Western United States, and that's reaching also 95 different agencies training in the areas of de-escalation. We've extended this essentially over 15 states, so very proud of the efforts and the work that was done in that particular area, and it really kind of put the University Police Department, not only the Southern region, Southern Command, but also Northern Command on the map. Here's a few other ones. I'll try to make this quick. I'm sorry. Some of the new grants. So last year we applied for a total of approximately $427,000 in funding, and we were awarded all of it. Some of that was the State Emergency Response Commission, which is a United We Stand grant. That was in order for us to purchase some license plate readers. That's about $28,000. Traffic Safety Enforcement Initiative for Vulnerable Road Users, that was $82,000 that was granted. Our Community Policing Micro Grant, which was $125,000, which is going to help us fund the Citizens Police Academy that I talked to you about. We also received $190,000 for our Law Enforcement Mental Health and Wellness Grant. That one we have underway. We have already contracted with a company that is actually providing services to not only our staff, but to family members and friends that support our staff, as well as an extended community in that area. Just a few quick highlights. A lot of photos here. I like photos. I think they speak for themselves. But I just want to talk a little bit about some in particular. We recently had our Excellence in Blue recognition ceremony. This marked our second annual ceremony, and that was held. The first was held under the title. I'm sorry. This first one was held under the title of Excellence in Blue, and this past year's event was generously hosted by the Orleans Hotel and Casino. I'd like to highlight a few individuals who received major awards during the ceremony portion of the evening. First and foremost is Officer Darren Franklin. He was awarded our Sworn Employee of the Year for in recognition of his exceptional performance and dedication above and beyond the call of duty. Officer Franklin was a visionary behind the creation of our traffic enforcement unit and has served as its lead coordinator. In addition, he received the Outstanding Leadership and Coordination Award for joining forces for his work and dedication, which also resulted in UPD earning the Outstanding Agency Recognition Award as well. Another recipient was Officer Christian Marine. Christian Marine was awarded the Life-Saving Medal for his swift action in pulling an unconscious driver out of a burning vehicle after it collided with a pole. Officers Ryan Wells, Andrew Marrero, and David Myers were awarded Life-Saving Medals for their swift actions in administering Narcan and CPR, saving the life of a subject who was suffering from an overdose. Officer Marine Bogate was awarded the Distinguished Service Award after de-escalating a volatile subject who was threatening serious self-harm, allowing officers to safely detain the subject without any use of force. And finally, Officer Eric Rosero was awarded the Police Commendation Award after he successfully delivered a baby while on duty. Okay, this is going to be, I think, my last slide before I wrap up. The future of the department, I talked a little bit about our traffic safety unit. Darren Franklin is pictured here. Officer Franklin, he has found his niche in traffic enforcement and DUI enforcement. He was the one who spearheaded the start of our traffic unit. We have been able to procure the funds for motorcycles, which you will see. They should be delivered here shortly. Really excited about that. That'll provide us opportunity to up our game in traffic enforcement, but also be able to readily respond to other areas of campuses or on campus and get to those quickly. So without going into more detail on that, that's a little bit about what we have going on for the future. And for our CLEAR report, so each year we release the annual security and fire safety report. The ASR plays a crucial role in upholding the rights and safety of everyone on campus. It also supports the ongoing commitment to fostering the well-being of our community. In accordance with federal law and the board policy, Title IV, Chapter 1, Section 12, included in supplemental materials are the 2024 annual security reports for the student-serving institutions in Southern Nevada. The reports were completed by the Southern Command team, containing statistics for calendar year 2022 through 2024. These statistics were reported to the Department of Education, as I mentioned, and were published in October of 2025. And with that, I apologize for going over. This concludes my report to the committee. Thank you for your time and your continued support. I'll be happy to answer any questions if you have them.
Thank you, Chief. Any questions from committee members, non-committee members?
Question from the north.
Vice Chair Arascata, go ahead.
Thank you very much. Chief Asquez, on page 4 of 13 of your slides, you have a crime statistics. I was just curious if I see a significant increase with narcotics and theft. Is there a correlation between those two? And the second question is, if there are those narcotic arrests on the campuses or are they on ancillary streets?
Thank you, Vice Chair Scott, for the question. Arnold Vasquez for the record. I would like to say that they are connected in some way, shape, or form. I think that I don't have the actual breakdown for you, but I would imagine that if I was to go and dig into those particular cases, I would likely find that somebody that we're making an arrest for a narcotics case is likely probably in the process of committing a theft, but I don't have that concrete information for you, nor do I have whether it's actually on ancillary streets, but what it would include would be anything on our jurisdictional boundaries. So that would include basically any of the bordering streets around any one of our campuses. And really the increase on that is, you know, we do have a number of different units within our department, and I'm asking a lot of our staff to get out there and make contacts with people. The more people you talk to in this profession, generally they lead to other types of incidents that arise, and that's where I'm correlating that rise in.
Thank you. Because once again, going back to 4 of 13, there's 4 significant items that seem to have a relationship. Mm-hmm. You have narcotics, which is increased. The disturbance of the peace is two. Then you have theft and trespassing. All four of those seem to go into one big handful of illegal activity. Mm-hmm. Are these taking place in the apartments around the campuses or in the dorm rooms?
No. So I couldn't. Sorry, Arnold Vasquez for the record. I couldn't give you a specific breakdown for each and percentages for those. I'll look into that for the future. But what I will tell you is that trespasses are primarily on the open areas of the campus in which we have contacted somebody in the past, and for some reason they were either cited or arrested for a violation or committed a campus policy violation, and therefore we have issued them a notice of trespass. When we contact them again, then at that point, they are subject to arrest or citation. So most of them, I would say, are not necessarily in the dorms. They're more in the open spaces of the campuses.
Wonderful. Appreciate it. Thank you, Chief Vasquez.
You're welcome.
I have a follow-up question, Chair.
Go ahead, Regent Downs, please.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Regent Arriscada. Sorry. Go ahead.
Chief Vasquez, for the trespass, back to that, are those primarily, is it a mix of people? Is it primarily students or people associated with campus, or is it community members that aren't associated with campus?
Arnold Vasquez, for the record. Thank you, Regent Downs, for that question. Again, I don't have the breakdown, but what I can tell you from my experience and what I see on a daily is they are more non-affiliated folks on campus versus affiliates of our campuses. Higher percentage,
thank
very
you.
High.
Thank you, Regent Downs. Any other questions? Thank you, Chief. That was a great presentation. I had just one quick question.
Okay.
Last year, you had 10 emergency management tabletop exercises. What were they? I saw that on one of your slides.
Oh, I'm sorry. So, Arnold Vasquez, for the record. Tabletop exercises, we have completed through emergency management a number of them. We have completed, I believe it was two with CSN and the policy groups last year. We are also expanding those now to some of the smaller subdivisions of those particular leadership teams at the various campuses. I believe this year, or coming up in about 30 days or so, I think we have one for UNLV planned. We have also done one with NSU as well. So that team really has partnered with FEMA and just followed their kind of protocol and how they run these tabletop exercises. And we've actually ran through some real actual incidents that we had recently experienced at those campuses and were able to get to those very, very well, I think.
Yeah, I know. I heard they were really good, especially from my favorite president. Oh, they're two presidents. Yeah, sorry. President Klippenstein, that you had one then that was well received. And that's what I was talking about. 10 in 1 year is pretty good. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much, Chief, and I appreciate you're going fast with all of that. There was so much to ask, but thank you so much.
Of course. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Next one is the chief from the north who ran away from the cold. Where's Chief James? There he is.
Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
My name is Eric James. I'm the University Police Chief of the North. I'm going to use that from now on, just so you know. And I was just making a comment. I feel like I should have a sword and a shield every time I go in a big cape. Chief of the North, okay. Good morning, everyone. It's great to see my colleagues up in the North. I hope your drive-in today was wonderful, because mine was, because it's like 80 degrees and there's no snow down here. my name is Eric James. I am the police chief. Today we're going to go over security updates. Let's see here. Okay. So our statistics, much like Arnold's, you're going to see a lot of repetitive here. I apologize for that. One thing that I'm always a little bit proud of is the fact of our use of force incidents are very low, and we end them with about 99.8% where we don't use force at all. Total contact citizens, about 31,000. Our CAD dispatch, 5,400. And foot patrol is 5,500 hours of foot patrol throughout our campuses in Northern Nevada. wrong way. Somewhere about partnership and updates. We worked with DRI, and we installed a fence, and it doesn't seem like it would be a big deal. But the particular area where we installed this fence, it overlooks Reno, and a lot of time at night we'll get just a myriad of cars up there, and usually illegal activity comes with that. So putting that fence really restricts that area, and so thanks to DRI for that. We collaborated with TMCC. We developed an ICE response protocol. We did a little bit of training with them regarding that. I partnered with the facilities. When TMCC has a type of event, political event, commencement, we use a particular room, and we can't see out of that room. And so they graciously assisted us by putting a clear window so we can now see and kind of record the event going on. It makes it just much better for us. We did support some earthquake drill training with DRI, TMCC, with our CSO and officer participation. TMCC graciously provided us a new patrol vehicle. Thank you to Mike Pearl for that and President Alexander. And then as you probably all you know, we had hot August nights on the university, and it was just a seven-day event, and it was all hands on deck. And the event went very well, I'm very happy to say. And then we finally removed all the radioactive materials that were left on campus. They finally got them out with the Department of Energy and coordinating with our drone team, EH&S, and our radiation safety officers. Two officers completed the radiation specialist training through the Department of Energy out in Tennessee. We co-hosted a regional critical incidents with UNR and RPD, covering the Route 91 shooting and the UNLV shooting debrief. Sergeant Stewart did some additional training for active shooter response. Madison was accepted into the Community Engagement Scholarship Program at UNR. Very proud of her for that. As you all know, we have a drone program, and our lead drone operator, Eddie, is absolutely enthralled with drones, which I love. And so he broke down the amount of hours that they flew. He just did training on Monday with the team. He's got an 8 or 9-man team of both sworn officers and non-sworn officers. And I can tell you, we had an incident just a few weeks ago where RPD called us and said, hey, can you get the drone up? And we were happy to help provide them with that as well. So he's found lost children. He's searched buildings with those things. They're absolutely incredible. Very, very proud of that program. Department grants, again, are joining forces. We continue to do that. We're going to be purchasing some more PBTs and a speed trailer to use around our northern campuses. We do the pedestrian safety. We have the faculty grants to help support travel for some of our faculty members inside the department. And then the JAG award, got some more tasers, and then Mike Thompson is going to the master school certification. And then also the United We Stand purchased and installed some security cameras as well. For a total funding, about $160,000. Haneen does an amazing job, along with Debbie, working together. And I'm really happy to say that it's wonderful to see the officers participating in this, saying, I found a grant, can we work on this? So it's really officer-driven from the bottom up, which I really appreciate. Our victim services, Dela does a fantastic job. She did 84, and that number is low because she doesn't tell me everything she does. I know that's low. But we had 35 consistent with UNR's jurisdiction. We had 39. She was even helping an individual out in Elko as well. We had 10 non-NC cases and then 10 ongoing. She is absolutely one of the best assets to our department to assist victims of crime, because when I say, Dela, can you do this? She reaches out immediately and just does an amazing job for us and is absolutely a go-to when it comes to victim advocacy. Some of our outreach, that's a good picture of me. Well, we provided 106 active assailant classes. I was just up in Pahrump yesterday at the GBC campus. I did an active assailant there, and then Jeff from Elko came up, both Jeffs came out, and they did some, this is where we're going to be putting some cameras, this is where the prox cards are going to go, and we just had a really good 2 to 3 hour session of just kind of talking through some of the issues they have out there. We're going to be doing some follow-up training for them as well. So that was a really good trip because I drove down, and if you've never driven from Reno, it's a wonderful drive. Insert applause here. Good. Women's self-defense classes, we did 47 of those. We had orientation department sessions. Just kind of giving up, this is what we do. I did 80 of those and a couple threat assessment that Kelly handled as well. Some of our campus, you know, we do coffee with a cop. We go up to the child care up off Comstock. Hero of the Day over at Doral Academy. Battle of the Badges at the Blood Drive. Street Vibes, Virginia City. Orientation fairs. Ladies' Night self-defense classes at the Discovery Museum. And then we kind of collaborated with Reno After Dark. It's a kind of a popular Instagram reel where a guy just takes pictures, and he takes really good pictures, and he came out with us and walked a football game and took some great photos. And again, that's those are just highlights. There's something happening every day. The team is amazing. Amanda's team, organizational resiliency highlights. You can see they did training and exercises designed in the following. I am not going to read all that. You can see it. But her and her team stay busy doing what they do. I actually just brought down, if you look up to the left, my left up here, the trauma kit. I brought down a trauma kit to our UNR extension in Pahrump yesterday. And the Master Gardener program there, if you think about it, they're the ones who probably need tourniquets because they're using power tools and sharp objects. There's a good chance they could hurt themselves. So I brought that down to them. So they have that now as well. So all of our campuses have some type of trauma kit, which is fantastic. The emergency planning, she continues to do, working through all that. And then regional exercises. For the first time, we did a tabletop exercise specifically for Hot August Nights, considering it is a regional event. We had 22 partners show up to that event, and it was very, very well done. Again, you can see what she does. Her and her team are everywhere, from the balloon races to Carson City Emergency Preparedness to Nevada Safety Committee. Jennifer Delaney just received her emergency management certification, which was awesome. And so they are busy. In fact, I don't get a chance to see them very much, but I will tell you this. Because of her, they purchased Starlink. And so driving down, I was able to have Wi-Fi the entire way down, which was absolutely insane. But it was really cool. And so we got 6 or 8 of those Starlinks that in an emergency, we can now whip those out and people can connect to them just like a hotspot and Wi-Fi. So good on them for taking advantage of that. And then our internal updates. Patrick, he graduated as the valedictorian from the Northern Nevada Law Enforcement Academy. Super proud of him. Good young man, good head on his shoulders. We had a new lateral come aboard, and then we had one sergeant and one lieutenant retire. Sergeant Conley, after 20-plus years of service, he retired, and Lieutenant Nero just retired again and recently got married as well. Congratulations, Chris. And so he retired as well. So we have already filled that sergeant position, and we're going to be doing testing sometime in April for that lieutenant position as well. Really proud of the work that John Wolf does with his building company. They named the street just north of campus George Sullivan Parkway. George Sullivan, who was killed years ago in 1998. And so we continue to have, you know, his memory stay alive with us through our golf tournament and the great work that John does. Officer Green was nominated and received the Employee of the Year. Jeremiah recently came back to us. He left us, the traitor, to go down to Carson City Sheriff's Department, and then he came back. And so he won. Not only is he the Employee of the Year, named after George Sullivan, but he also just became our new detective. So I'm very proud of him. Officer Presidio received the Life Saving Award, and then Officer Lozado and Sobkowitz and Pinion all received meritorious awards. Eddie actually got 2 in one time. That guy is he's a rock star. And then community service updates. We promoted Manny. Fran left us to go out to California, and Manny stepped into that role for us. And then we just recently hired on 2 new CSOs to kind of fill some spots. So our CSO program under Manny and under Fran as well is just so robust. I'm very proud of those individuals for what they do. And thank you. Does anyone have any questions for me?
Thank you, Chief. That's great. Of course, Officer Patrick is a good man. That's a good name to have. But I saw you had a WMD expert. One of your guys now is trained in that. Do we have one like that? Oh, there he is. He's still here. Okay. Do we have someone like that?
Yeah, did you send anyone up to Tennessee for the radioactive?
Yeah, for the no.
According to Chief Vasquez, he'll be looking into that immediately.
Oh, he will be. That's awesome. I love it. Any questions from any of the regents on the committee? None? Off the committee, anyone? No? But that was quick.
Chair Boylan.
Yes, go right ahead, ma'am. Where are you? Okay.
Thank you. I just wanted to say, and I was going to chime in earlier, but I knew I would speak up here too, and I want to talk to both the chiefs equally. I've had opportunities to talk with some of your officers and detectives, lieutenants, in the last couple of weeks, and the character and the just how professional they're handling some of these really tough calls that they're getting on campuses. I just really want to highlight that. because we know that this type of police work is much different because you see these people day in and day out. It's not new people every day. And so you're building rapport. And so when an incident does happen on campus, you know, it's understanding the community around it and how they feel. And I know that you guys have taken such good care of our students. And I just really wanted to highlight that and say thank you guys for all of your work you do in the North and the South.
Thank you, Regent Brown.
Thank you, Regent Brown. Appreciate that, because I think all of us appreciate our police, especially me. And thank you for driving down here, Chief of the North, James. Keep that sword. Oh, I had one last question, sir.
Yes, sir.
I didn't hear anything about the dogs up north. You usually have something about your dogs.
Well, I didn't want to let it out of the bag. However, yeah. Officer Wasser just got back from California from getting a new dog. We are retiring Sapa. She's our EOD dog. She's about 9 years old. And she's slowing down a little bit, so it's time to get a new dog. And so now she is back with Sazza. We traded a Z for a P. It was kind of weird. But, again, another German short-haired pointer. And just, like I said, Officer Wasser, phenomenal dog handler. The EOD calls that they do yearly is, you would have no idea, but it's in the tens of thousands that they respond to and they help out with. So, yeah.
Yeah, I'd heard about that dog. That's why I wanted to make sure. But I
that was for next
that.
Time, though. So
that was for next. Yeah. Awesome. Thank you so much, Chief. I appreciate it. Okay, next one is number seven. Agenda item number seven: NC Cybersecurity. I see you here. Thomas Dobbert is in chair. So are you taking his place, or is he here? He's in the north. Oh, he's going to speak from up there. Okay, sorry. All right. Thank you. Go ahead, sir. Thank you for
being here. Yes, thank you. Good morning, everyone. For the record, my name is Thomas Dauber, Chief Information Security Officer. And thank you for giving me the opportunity to brief you on a few follow-ups from the last meeting, some current topics, and also some current threats that we might want to look at. So let me start with the follow-ups. So we had our October Cybersecurity Month presentations in October, November last year. And one of the presentations was from our own state CIO, Tim Galluzzi, and he gave us an update and discussed publicly available information on the lessons learned from the incident of last year. So that was very interesting. I also promised you to bring you some stats on cybersecurity training at the institutions, but unfortunately I'm unable to do this at this point because we don't all collect the same metrics. But I have more on that in a few minutes here. We have a working group that works on the NIST CSF 2.0 safeguard rules self-assessment, and we completed that assessment successfully, and there's still some work to do on the campuses, but overall, this was a good engagement, and there's also some software available that we want to look into, but that is not of a super high priority at this point. We also discussed workday notifications. If an employee or if an employee's bank or routing number has changed. And Microsoft actually has warned that there are threat actors out there. They call them payroll pirates that target software as a service platforms like Workday and use phishing to hijack accounts and redirect salaries. And we had a few cases of those within ENGIE. So it's still a hot topic, but nothing has developed there yet, but it is still on the priority list. We did complete guidelines for the use of note takers during virtual meetings. That was a hot topic last time. And the guideline basically says that we have to be in charge of the meeting so we can control the narrative that the note taker puts out, because sometimes the note taker does not interpret everything correctly, what's being said. And in addition to that, we have to own the records in case there's ever a public request, so we can actually produce them. And if they are held by a third party, for example, it's virtually impossible for us to get the records. We also completed a document on international travel because SCS does not want our equipment to leave the United States. So we have implemented a loaner program, and employees that leave the U.S. can request a loaner laptop, and then we install the software that's needed or required. And upon return, we will wipe the laptop completely so that any potential malware can be deleted immediately. And the last update is in regards to the verbiage for the Board of Regents handbook and the PGM, or Procedures and Guidelines Manual. So we are very close to finishing this, and we are still working with the legal team to put the final touches on there. But I am very concerned, or my three points are that we actually anchored a cybersecurity awareness training into the policy, because right now it does not state that employees are required to take this training. And I really would like to see this to be a requirement. I also think that all purchases of technology, such as hardware, software, software as a service, have to be run by the local IT department first, because very often I have seen that departments went out, bought something, and then came to IT here, plug it in. Well, that usually doesn't go over very well. So this way it creates a little bit more work for IT, but at least we have to guarantee that whatever equipment is being purchased actually will work. And then the last item on my list is the AI policy. So we discussed this at length and came to the conclusion that there's no point to create a policy for AI only, because AI is moving so fast and we would be constantly updating this policy. Instead, we are using the current existing verbiage, update that, and we are addressing current and future technologies. And all this will be listed in the Board of Regents handbook then. So like I said, hopefully we can present this pretty soon for discussion and approval. And that brings me to current topics. So the state released a new policy for data classification, and that took effect on the 10th of February this year. And it's a four-tier structure, if you will. And one is public data, second is sensitive data, confidential, and restricted data. And we are currently going through this policy and see if there's anything we have to do on our end here for ENGIE. But more to follow on that. So going back to the metrics for cybersecurity awareness training. So we created a working group with all the ENGIE institutions where we are discussing if it would be potentially possible to centralize the training. We have Workday. We're already paying for Workday, and Workday has a module called Workday Learning. So we might as well put the files for the cybersecurity awareness training into Workday. So we are looking at that feasibility. There are a few upsides to this. One of them is that all the employees get trained on the same quality of training. If there is a new threat that's coming out, we can upload a SCORM file really quick and push it out to all the institutions, which is currently not possible. And we also hope for potential cost benefits, of course, because we are all using the same vendor at this point. And one of the stumbling blocks will be, what do you do with part-time instructors, for example, that only teach one semester per year? Do you force them to do it on a monthly basis? So these are all questions we have to answer. And the majority of the institutions currently only offers this training once a year, which in my personal opinion is by far not enough. I don't have scientific evidence to back this up, but short micro-training on a frequent basis provides much, much better outcomes, because it does trigger our mind to be resourceful and careful here. Yeah, so more to follow on that topic for sure. And then all the ENGIE institutions do fall under the GLBA safeguard rules. I say all, that's actually not quite true. DRI does not fall under that because they don't have students. They don't deal with parents and students' financial information, but all the other institutions do. And we have to have a GLBA information security plan in place. So we actually created one for the system administration, and we shared that with the institutions, and they can use that as a template and then fill in their own verbiage there. So hopefully that will be done pretty soon here as well, so we are covered in that area. So that takes me to current threats. Phishing attempts are still my number one, and that could be emails, phone calls, text messages, social engineering, you name it. And we still constantly have to work on strengthening the what's called human firewall, because we are the ones that are getting the emails that have to respond to things, right? We are doing whatever we can on the back end, so we have multi-factor authentication in place. We use dedicated institutional devices. We don't, or we discourage using personal devices from home and remoting into our systems. And then, of course, employee training should also be number one. And we also have the what's called the fish button in place. So whenever an employee sees an email that is questionable, please hit that fish button and let your IT department know. And for the system administration, I can say that we are looking at every single report. Right? Okay, so back to AI. So the AI tools develop so quickly. There's a new development almost on a daily basis. For Engie specifically, I think we are the stewards of our data, and we should be very, very careful and put guide rails in place before we even implement any bigger AI tools like agents or things like that. So we are definitely discussing this in the Information Security Council. And we also have to look at third-party software, because it seems to be fashionable these days that every vendor has to have AI in their software, but they don't tell us what they're actually doing with AI or where our data goes, who has access to it, what's the data lifecycle replacement, things like that. So we have to look at our procurement processes, and we also need to involve the risk management office and the audit department to look at that. So it's a new frontier for us. And then, of course, there's the academic side, which I don't want to go in too deep here, but I just read an article this morning that students technically could pay for a service that takes their classes in Canvas, and then that service also takes their quizzes in Canvas. So more to follow on that, I'm sure. So two more things really quick. Notepad++, you probably heard about that incident. It didn't affect us too much, but it's a perfect or classic supply chain attack. That's why I want to bring it up. So the automatic update system was compromised during a targeted cyber attack in 2025. And while the software itself was not modified, attackers infiltrated the infrastructure that delivers the updates and potentially could add malicious code to the update, which then was installed on some of on a limited number of systems without the user's knowledge. So the Engie institutions immediately took action there, at least those that were affected by this, and they uninstalled their current version of Notepad++ and either left it off or installed the latest version, which was safe. And then I want to close with something really positive, because I have an update on EduRoam, and there are currently over 250 locations in Nevada where students from the high school or school system and higher education can access secure connections to Wi-Fi. And we are still working on our Reno and Las Vegas airports, really hard to get those involved as well, but I leave it there. And I'm also happy that one of our own, Derek Isla, he probably didn't want to have his name mentioned, but here you go there, Derek. He is now the chair of the U.S. EduRoam Advisory Committee. So he now has a huge influence on setting the direction for EduRoam in the U.S. And with that, I want to conclude and see if there are any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Daubert. Every time you or your colleagues give us information, I realize how much I don't know. But in the essence of time, I'll ask, I'd request, I can do that, have no questions, Council Nielsen. If the regents don't have any, please don't have any questions. Yeah, just because we're running late, so if you don't mind, regents, hold your questions, and then you can always, email or text and find out. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. All right, the next thing, item number 8, new business. Is there any new business from any of the regents? I know I have something, but I'll keep my opinion to myself this time because of time. Anybody up north, the regents, any new business? Regent Arizona?
Regent Boyle?
Yes, sir.
Both myself and Regent Downs had questions for Mr. Daubert prior to being receiving the hook and being pulled off the mic.
Oh, okay.
I know that.
I apologize.
I realize the time is of the essence of the South.
Yeah.
But I feel that these are questions that are relevant to the discussion.
All right, Regent Arascata, can I open it out to questions now? Since I said no questions,
I think we have a little bit of latitude, Chair.
Outstanding.
Boyle. It's an informational item. Thank you.
Outstanding. I apologize, guys. Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Daubert. Thanks for coming back up to the microphone. You were talking about some of the training, in particular the regent training, for cybersecurity. But we are referring to the regents. We're referring to all the campuses. but you're talking about additional trainings and risk would increase mechanisms to defend against cybersecurity or increase cybersecurity.
Right. So currently, every institution has their own contract with a certain platform, whatever they choose. And what we were thinking is that we're actually centralizing the training and potentially putting it all into Workday, if that works out. And then this way, all the institutions have the same baseline for the training. All the employees get trained on the same topics, GLBA, you name it, whatever it is. And we can also get stats from all the institutions at that point. And a big benefit, of course, which I think I didn't mention, is if an instructor, for example, works at several institutions, they have to take the training at every single institution right now. And if we have a centralized training for everyone, then they don't have to do that. And HR is already doing this with sexual harassment training, so why shouldn't we also be able to do this for IT, for cybersecurity?
Very good point. And you're also mentioning about employees or individuals who work on our campuses, that travel overseas, and you're yes. referring about that. Has there been any infiltration of software from overseas and returning to the United States?
Well, we are not aware of any actual breaches at this point, but I'm getting very nervous when people, for example, travel to China or to Russia or whatever, and we don't want to have people's work laptops that they use on a daily basis being outside of the country in case something gets installed and then these people come back and connect to our network and then we don't know what's going to happen. And that's why we prefer to give them loaner laptops, which we can wipe afterwards, and then all the malicious software is gone if there is any on there.
Loaner laptops, great idea. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it, Mr. Delbert.
Okay.
So I appreciate your presentation and your efforts for keeping us safe. I've certainly seen when we saw the state of Nevada, and we saw some school districts who had issues of major cybersecurity intrusions. So I did want to make a point, though. I know at my own institution, they seem to do a really good job with our firewall and keeping out phishing. And to me, the phishing I'm seeing is the trying to catch us making a mistake phishing and not the actual phishing. So, but I have found myself more than one time thinking, I think I need to respond to this, but I'm not going to respond to this. So I don't know what to do. So sometimes I wonder, does it, I won't say, I guess, prevent people from sometimes doing their job if we're just concerned about, is this a phishing attempt or is this someone trying to catch me with a mistake or what? Is there a way to address that so it doesn't slow down or make it less productive?
Yeah, I can see where this can go in the wrong direction, and that's not an attempt to do that, to make people fail. What I would recommend is just use the phish button and report the email if you are in doubt. Okay. I'd rather have people sending me supposedly phishing attempts that are in fact not phishing attempts, and I respond, no, this is real, I checked this, and this is fine. Okay. Responding or not responding to something.
Clicking the phish button doesn't automatically ban the person. It just
Correct.
Goes to
Correct.
Review.
Okay. Yeah, it sends it to your local IT department, and okay. then those folks will look at it.
Okay, yeah. I appreciate that. Yeah. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Thank you to the two regents from the north. Really good questions. Learn something new every time. We can now go to new business. Thank you, Mr. Dobbs. I appreciate that.
Yep.
New business. Any new business items? Regent Arascata, Vice Chair Arascata, you look like you have something, no? Okay. Anybody in the south? No new business items? Public comment. Is there any public comment at GBC?
Well, there's no public comment at this time.
All right, thank you. Is there any public comment at the system office in Reno?
None in Reno.
Thank you so much. Is there any public comment here in Las Vegas? Seeing none, SCS, is there any public comment on the phone?
Not at this time.
Thank you so much. With that, I'll thank everybody for attending this meeting, and that concludes this meeting. Thank you so much.